Welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab Podcast, where we dissect a deal before your eyes and ears so you can discover the strategies and tactics that got each deal to the finish line. Strategies and tactics that you can put in your own toolbox to get you to the closing table. From sourcing the deal, raising, due diligence to the property takeover, Multifamily Deal Lab shows how you too can get the deal done. And now here's your host, David Lindahl.
Welcome to Deal Lab. This is Dave Lindahl. My special guest today is the one and only Graciela. How have you been?
Well, we've been hanging in here, Dave. It's a crazy world out there.
Where are you right now?
I'm in San Antonio, Texas.
San Antonio was just on the news this morning. Well, 115 degrees. Is that what it is down there now?
Yes, we're in a heat wave here. So we're staying in no matter what, you know.
So first of all, thanks for coming on to the Deal Lab. And I want to, Graciela started with us way back in 2006. She went to a big Learning Annex event. A Learning Annex is where Trump used to speak, Tony Robbins used to speak, I used to speak. They had these big stages of 10, 20, 30,000 people. And then we all had back rooms with anywhere from that fit from 200 to 900 people. So at that particular event, they gave me a room that fit 900. And I think about 150 were in my room. Graciela was wanted to get to watch somebody else, but they were full and had a big line out front. So she looked in my room and saw the empty seats and thought, well, I'll just go in there. And the rest is history, right?
Exactly.
So then I guess I said a few things that made sense. Did her first deal. Tell the story about the flying down to Texas for your first deal. That's got to be like one of the best investor stories.
You told us in that seminar you had to go to Texas. I was thinking, oh my goodness. The Bay Area. And you told us exactly where to find deals. We went in the newspaper at that time, San Jose Mercury News, and they had an investor that owned property. He was in California, owned property in Texas, and he was selling like about four or five apartment complexes. And we had him send us all the information. We did exactly what you told us on that little sheet and did all our numbers, and the numbers worked. And so we made an offer without seeing it. And I remember you told us, we were just reading the script, really, your book. It was perfect. And at that moment, there was no turning back. You know, we decided we had no choice but to go forward and make this happen. And so at that time, we went ahead and made the offer, and I got on the plane. I told the broker exactly what you said. You need to meet me there, pick me up, and take me to see all these properties. And he said, all righty. And he did. And
yeah, so you're flying there, and you land, and then what happens?
Well, at that time, I couldn't get off the plane. I was really, really sick to my stomach. I was thinking to myself, what am I doing here? I mean, come on, multifamily. I was just like, you don't even know Texas. You don't know nothing about multifamily. But I had my little script.
At the time, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but at the time you were an elementary school teacher and your husband had been laid off from his full-time job.
Well, he hadn't yet. In 2008, he got laid off. But what made us our decision is my mom and dad, remember, they were on Social Security, and that broke my heart. And that's why we made the decision to go into multifamily. We were just doing real estate, in fact, single family. And we just wanted, and when I heard you, I was thinking, my God, it just made sense. You know, instead of having five roofs, you have one roof with five units, you know, and it totally made sense for us. So I got there and I was really sick to my stomach. I was so sick all the way there thinking, what are we doing or what am I doing? And I wanted to go back and couldn't get off the plane. The stewardess said, you need to get off the plane. I said, I can't move. I'm going to throw up. I couldn't get sick. And she said, okay. So they helped me get off the plane. And I went straight to the bathroom. And I was in there for about an hour getting sick. And when I came out, all the lights were off in the airport. Oh my God, I'm going to get locked in here like Tom Hanks in the movie. So when I went down the escalator, there was just my luggage just going around by itself. And there was one gentleman down there and was a broker. And he said, you must be Graciela. And I said, yes. He goes, I thought you missed the plane. I said, no, I got sick. And he said, oh, and he said something that really was in line with what you say all the time. And he said, it's a miracle that you're here. And I said, why? And he said, 99% of people that are trying to do real estate never do what they say they're going to do. And he said, the fact that you're even here, the fact that you're a woman, the fact that you're, at that time I was young, and the fact that you're Hispanic, that he just pointed all those things up, those odds are against you. And it's a miracle. And I said, well, I'm here, so let's go. Let's do what we're doing. He took me around to see the properties, and I'm using your little underwriting sheet. And
the underwriting template.
He said, what do you do? Yeah. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to see if the numbers work and see if this is the right price. And I, of course, I'm saying exactly what you have in your book. And he said, well, what do they say? And I said, no, it's, you know, it's not the right price. And he said, well, what is the right price? And I told him the price. And then he said, okay. And then I said, plus you have to give me $25,000 in repair allowance. And he goes, what? And I go, well, we went, you saw all the repairs needed, and either you can do them or you can give me the $25,000 at closing. And he said, okay. And that was it. That was our first property, 16 units. Unfortunately, I still have it, and I not
oh,
say unfortunately.
Have that first deal?
I still have it because it was our cash flow. I think after 1 year, I almost cried because I couldn't believe we were making almost as much as I was as a school teacher. It was one little property, and I thought, oh, my goodness. Now, I bought it for $225,000. Of course, I didn't have to put any money down because he gave me the $25,000 at the closing. And we fixed it up, but it always kept giving us cash flow. It's now worth $1 million. That little property, and it's giving us a good cash flow from $6,000 to $7,000 a month.
Oh, that's really good from a small property like that.
Yeah, I only took the equity out once, but just a little bit, just to help buy another property, but not too much. The mortgage is hardly anything. So,
go back to the execution of that first deal, because that's what we do when we dissect deals. Tell everybody how many you bought after that.
We bought 20 apartment complexes.
20. What was the total number of units?
Probably close to 3,000.
So 3,000 doors. So it started with somebody who was sick to her stomach, not wanting to get off the plane, gets the first deal done, a 16 unit. And then now we are at 14 years later, and you've done 20 deals, 3,000 units. And you're still active.
Yes.
Yeah. How's it changed your life?
Tremendously. Unbelievable. I was able to take care of my parents, and that was my goal.
Did you set your mom up with a six family one time?
I set her up with a single family. So she has a single family, and it's bringing her close to $900 a month of income that she is just so happy and blessed, you know, doing very well right now with that money. I mean, I don't know where they would have been. You know, unfortunately, my father passed away 2 years ago, but I got to take care of him. I was able to pay his health care. He lived very, very comfortable, and we got to travel. He was almost 90 years old, so he lived a very good life. And I want to thank you, because if I didn't meet you or I didn't go to that program, I don't know what I would have been, where my parents would have been at this time. So thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, it's the that's the rewards that we get, you know, from people that actually, because we know it works, it's a proven system, you know, and the people that actually go out and use it and put it into place. And then we see the lives that it changes. It's rewarding in itself. I was just talking to somebody yesterday, and his best friend he was a young guy in his early 30s, and his best friend has just been killed in a plane crash. And he was at the funeral, and we were talking that night, and he said, you know, it's just so, it happened so suddenly, you know, and he said, I started doing a reflection on my life and, you know, what I wanted to be known for. And he said, you know, at your funeral, Dave, he says, what do you want people to be saying about you? I want people to say, that freaking guy changed my life.
Yes. Amen.
You're one of them. That's what makes it so
and
awesome.
And you did. Dave, I can't express to everyone that's listening how much support we got from your team.
Ari
it
Mentor.
Was, yes, Ari Mentor. It was, they were there every step of the way. The coaching was phenomenal. In fact, he kicked me out. My coach kicked me out. He said,
Because you weren't doing it?
Too much. Yeah.
He said, they keep you accountable.
He said, you can't be in the program anymore. I got too many students and you know what you're doing. In fact, he was asking me to help him with some of his students. And I was like, okay, I got it. I got it. But he was just phenomenal. And then Jeannie, I used to tell people Jeannie was my best friend. And then I found out she's everybody's best friend.
Yeah, that's right. She's motherly. She's very motherly.
Yeah. Exactly. But
let's go into that deal and talk about the different hurdles, because you know, obviously it was something that you were so afraid to do, and people have, you know, fear at different levels, and a lot of people have fear at high levels, and that's why they don't get started. You had this extreme fear. You actually didn't want to get off the plane. So
yes.
Do you think it was because you got on that plane that you know, then you were forced to get off, and then you actually get out of that bathroom when everything we thought was closed, and then he was down there with the broker, so you were forced to talk to him. So you think you were successful in that aspect? Well, number one, you were successful because you got on the plane, but then you actually put yourself in a situation where you were forced to perform.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even then, though, you could have seen that property and then went back home, but then you started going through the different materials and the systems, and you started getting confidence. Correct.
Yes.
Because this is what we see with our students all the time. It's once they start using it and putting it into place, they start to get confident, and they start to realize it's like, wow, I really can do this. And it's like, wow, I really do have a good understanding of what I'm doing. And then when they start seeing that respect from the broker, you know, the other people that they're dealing with, then that confidence gets even deeper.
Yeah.
So now you've got the confidence. You get through there and you actually made the offer. So your confidence was high. So after you made that offer and started doing the due diligence process, what was the big surprise? You know, there's always a big surprise in due diligence. What was the big surprise in your due diligence?
The big surprise was how old the property was. And that was, for me, the big surprise, because I'm not from Texas. And it was all brick. And they had the swamp coolers on the roof. I was like, oh, my goodness. But a few years into it, we got those off. And we put window units, which are very efficient because we have these really nice window units that also do heat and air. And that was more cost effective. And they just were more efficient than the water coolers, because the water coolers kept breaking down, kept getting leaks. And so that was the biggest surprise, because I hadn't seen a water cooler since I was a kid, because we used to have one in our house. We used to live on a ranch, and we had one in our house. That was the only AC I ever knew. And I was thinking, oh, my God, they still have these things, you know. So that was the biggest surprise. And, you know, learning also the difference between gas. You know, they had gas furnaces in the unit as well. We put the carbon monoxide on in every unit to make sure that, you know, everyone was safe. And so that was something else that was a surprise. They had those old wall ones. I don't know if people are familiar with the tall wall furnaces.
Oh.
So that was a surprise. But other than that, I liked the fact that it was all brick. So I knew that here in Texas, brick is very important. But that was...
So during due diligence, you got surprises in terms of, you know, how things were built and how efficient they were in the different systems. Was there anything that was wrong with the property that beforehand that surprised you? Or more importantly, after you did your due diligence, closed on the property, what popped up? Because something always pops up, you know, within that first year of ownership. It's like, holy crap, I didn't think this was going to happen, right?
Right. Let me try to think back that long ago. I had a lot of people that lived there that were on Social Security.
Yeah.
And they were only paying like $350 a month or...
What was market?
And I was, it was about $550 to $650.
Wow.
Right. And so that was a challenge, because I didn't want them to be homeless, and I knew that their leases were up. So that was very a big challenge. And I did ask about housing, but they were not housing. They were on Social Security. So
that's interesting that you say that, because during the due diligence process, doing the lease audit, you know, sometimes what we'll do is go in and we'll take a look at their employment and see how they're who they're employed by, how long they've been employed there when they fill out the application.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure after that, did you add that onto your lease audit task list?
Of course. Yes, of course. Yeah, definitely. Because I didn't see anybody. I did ask how many were Section 8 housing, and they told me, I think they didn't have any. So that thought that was good, but they had a lot of Social Security. They had lived there for years, like 13 years. I mean, their units were just a mess.
I can understand your mindset, because your mom was on Social Security, right?
Yeah.
You got into apartments, and now you've got a place full of Social Security people, and you know the rents are higher, and that as a business owner, you got to get those rents higher. But are you going to evict your mom? That's what you're thinking, right?
No.
Am I going to evict my mom?
Exactly. Exactly.
Raise the rent to the point where they can't pay it. You know, that's like an eviction.
Right.
So what did you end up doing? How did you resolve that problem inside of your mind?
I went down to the Social Security, and I talked to the caseworkers, and I told them, this is the situation. And first, I was really concerned of the living conditions. What do you guys do? Somebody needs to go out there and help them, And then I told them that this is what we're going to be raising the rents, and so you need to make the modifications for them to be able to stay. And they did. I cannot believe it. They did. And I told them, and I need to see, I'm going to give you 1 month to help somebody, help them clean their unit. And because they were all elderly, And
Are you saying that you had the previous owner? You told the previous owner that it needed to make modifications prior to closing?
No. It was after we closed that I went to the Social Security and told them these are the new rents, and we need somebody to go and help these people clean their units, or we're going to do a non-renewal. And they did. I just came in there. There was about 5 of them. And then those 16 units, that's a big number. And I just pretty much trying to advocate for them, so they did. And we raised the rents only $100 to $450 instead of $350. Mm-hmm. But then, with the years, we kept raising them $25, $50, during the year until we got... Now we're renting them for about $900 to $1,000 a unit.
That's the beauty of emerging markets.
It is. And that's your key. You just said the key word. That's what has made us successful. I'm serious. Dave, if it wasn't for that emerging market, I don't know where I would have been, because what happens is, even when a property, for any reason, you can't get it stabilized or really challenging, if you are in an emerging market, the equity is just amazing. And that is so important. It keeps you out of trouble, the emerging market.
For a lot of mistakes.
Oh, yes, it does. And, we're very fortunate that we learned a lot, enough from your program, not to make too many mistakes, but we have encountered our own challenges. But that emerging market has really given us the tools, or whatever, the miracles that we needed.
Starting out and buying in emerging markets is really good, because, your biggest mistakes are going to be in your first deals, and hopefully you go through the training and your mistakes aren't big mistakes like mine were, but they're smaller mistakes. But they're still going to happen typically within your first 3 to 5 deals, the majority of them.
Right.
And if you buy an emerging market, that emerging market itself, the appreciation that you get in that market is the remedy. The rents rise, the appreciation rises, your equity rises.
Yes.
And before you know it, this deal that looked like it's turning into a dog actually turned into a gold mine. And then, the smart investor learns from their mistakes, and they continue to become a better investor. But it's the people that start buying in emerging markets, not realizing they're emerging markets. And then they all of a sudden they get this, they think they have the Midas touch, where, they think everything they touch turns to gold. And they get into a seller's market phase two, and they don't realize they're there, where the whole thing's going to turn around, within the next year or two. And they're stuck with a whole bunch of properties. And before you know it, their Midas touch is gone. And so are their properties.
Right.
The bank takes the majority of them back. So you went from that property, 16 unit, to what was your next property?
It was 108 units.
And where was it?
In the same market.
Was it with the same broker? Did that broker bring in the next deal?
No. We were following your program on how to find deals. And at that time, we looked at LoopNet, and this property just sort of came up, and it said seller finance. And that was the key at that time, because, again, I'm a school teacher, right? Who's going to give me $1 million, right? And or what lender is going to give me $1 million to buy a property? So this broker was from California. The owners were from California. And so we did the numbers and the numbers worked. And because of you, we were able to raise the money. It was $2.2 million. He wanted $1 million down.
So how much was the raise? It was $1 million raise?
$1 million raise, sir. Where did you and get that? Oh, of course, that was for our acquisition fee as well and the other costs and stuff. So what was amazing is that because you had me on stage a couple times, you know, a lot of people came and asked me, you know, questions. And I to this day, I have students calling and I always try to help them as much as I can. I'll bend over backwards for them. And, you know, I feel very honored. But at that time, I went try to raise money at some of your events. And it was amazing that all these investors gave me $1 million.
Found, like a lot of students do, they find that the live events, that there are actually people in the room with some deep pockets and they were looking to learn how to invest as well, but looking to invest in other people's deals.
Yes.
The power of being on a stage. So you came onto my stage. I love the story about the fact that you wouldn't get off the airplane, you know, and that's why I brought you up, because so many people have so much fear and I like them to look at you and say, my God, if she couldn't even get off the airplane, you know, she had that much fear, you know, if you can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but by being up there though, you get exposed, you know, people get a sense that they know you. They get your story, and then they approach you afterwards. And you were smart to say, "Hey, you know, I'm creating a list of investors. And if you know what I'm doing, want to know what I'm doing in the future, then you know, come on my list." And then you let them know what you're doing in the future. You know, they fill out the accredited investor form. But for anybody else, you know, the opportunity to get on a stage and just speak about anything, you know, that has to do with real estate, because that's what you're looking for, and tell people what you do. You want to take advantage of it when you can. Your local real estate investment group, your meetup groups. I know there's a lot of family offices out there. At one point, I was paying $15,000 for 15 minutes so I could get up and talk about emerging markets just for 15 minutes, because I knew that at the end of that 15 minutes, the 400 people in that room, you know, I was now known. I didn't have to go out and try to network with everybody, which I hate to do anyways. I was now a known commodity, and people would come up to me for the remainder of the day. And that's what the power of the stage does. So anytime you get the opportunity to go up there, if you're at a meetup group or a real estate investment club, and they have some of them call it the swap, or, you know, you talk about what you have. Anytime you have the opportunity to get up there and do things, and also create your own opportunities as well, because didn't you do a raising private money event in San Diego and raise a bunch of money on your first one? Did you do an event at a hotel? Is it you? Or am I thinking about somebody else? Did you do an event at a hotel and raise a bunch of money?
I did that in San Jose, California. Did that, and we were doing luncheons.
Talk about that. And by the way, if anybody wants to ask a question, hit your raise your hand button, and then Jermaine's on, and he will he'll get you in the queue, and we're going to start taking questions. Yeah, so talk about that. So early on, I know that, you know, you all of a sudden it started working, you know, deals started coming in. It was like, holy crap, where am I going to get the money to fund these deals? So you started doing what?
Well, we started networking, just like you said, going to different events, especially yours, not missing yours. Of course, we had so much more to learn, and we did. And we started networking and creating these luncheons. We'd provide lunch for them, and it was phenomenal. All we did is present versus single family with multifamily. That's what we were doing, presenting the difference between investing in multifamily, because, you know, we were doing syndication, so we had to be very careful about the information we were putting out there. And so that's what it was. And this, they asked us about any of our offers or deals that we had going on at the time, then we would give them the information. Of course, we had our sheets already, you know, our credibility sheets there. We were very prepared, and we were very successful. In every luncheon, we'd get at least one or two, at least, you know, up to five people. And we're talking about from 100 to 500,000. So
typically, how many people would attend these luncheons?
We had from about 13 to 25, believe it or not. And our match was 25.
How did you get them?
We just went through our investor list that we created from going to the event. We definitely, yeah, every time we got a business card, we put them on our potential investor list. And a lot of it, too, was word of mouth, because a lot of these people would invite somebody else. And, of course, they had to pre-register. We had them pre-registered. So our max was 25. But we called everyone. We invited them in the email and called everyone and tried to reserve a seat for them. And if they were going to bring a guest, to let us know. We were sort of sneaky. We tried to reserve at least, you know, 10 people over just in case, depending on the size of our room and the maximum we can put in there. And so that was it. And it was no charge, but it did require for them to be there in the morning. And then afterwards, we'd feed them lunch. And that gives us the opportunity to network at that time after lunch. So that's how we got those people. We just went to every event we can think of in the Bay Area. And so that was very successful, by going to the different events and getting the business cards and then calling and introducing and having a more of a one-on-one talk. And we learned a little trick, and I don't know if you were the one that told us that, you know, on our cards, what we would do is we would put A, B, and C. And A meant that they were looking to invest, and B meant that they had somebody they knew that was looking to invest, and C was that they were looking for properties or investors. So C was they were looking for investors themselves. And so yeah, we would put the letters on the cards, and that's how we created our list. We always reached out to everyone just because you never know.
50% of the people that say they're going to give you money won't, so you don't know which 50% they're going to be. So you got to reach out to them, yeah, all.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So, all right, listen, we're at the top of the hour, and I've actually got to be in another meeting. So I want to thank you, Graciela, for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. We've got to talk on the side as well. We haven't done that in a little bit. And say hello to everybody down there for me. And to everybody out there, you got homework. You got to get yourself into two networking situations. Right now with coronavirus, it's virtual events maybe very small social events with family members that you might know. And then the other thing is to, what's your dog's name?
His name is Tiny Tim. He was a runt. And they, uh-huh, when we bought him, they had to call him Tiny Tim. So now he stayed with Tiny Tim. How's your babies doing?
They're doing good. Well, let me tell everybody the other two homework. So the other two homework is you got to get yourself, put yourself two offers in. So, we talked about how to get those offers in earlier during the call. But yeah, my kids are great. The twins are 4 now, and my son is 2.
Amazing.
They're growing fast.
I know. That's good. I wish, this coronavirus is keeping us all away, but our prayers are with everyone.
Coming out to Boston. When it breaks open, coming out to Boston, we'll have a barbecue.
Well, definitely. Yeah, I love Boston. But you take care, and everybody, thank you for having me on, Dave.
Thank you, Graciela. I'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where the deals get done. If you'd like to learn more, visit davesfreebook.com. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review, and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening.